Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The Secrets to the Cowboys' Business Success. Hi friends, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Rebecca, and today is day two of our sports article, America's Team. And today we continue talking about the Dallas Cowboys, and this is the football, American football team from Dallas, Texas. And what is super interesting about this team, and yesterday we learned a new word, dichotomy. There's a dichotomy. So a dichotomy is a difference between two things or ideas that are completely opposite. And the dichotomy of this team is they are the most lucrative sports franchise in the world. They've made tons and tons of money, but they have done quite poorly as a sports team on the field. They have not won any major championship in U.S. football in 30 years. So it's actually quite amazing. You can do poorly, but to be so beloved that people still love buying your t-shirts and your merchandise. They still love watching your games. They still want to go to your games. And that is incredible. And to talk about all this incredible, I'm happy to welcome Peter back to the program.
Hi, Rebecca. Hi, everyone. Nice to be back.
Well, Peter, it's great to have you. And before we go further, because, you know, part of the Cowboys' appeal is people just love watching them. They love Google searching them. They love watching them on TV or maybe on YouTube, on all the different social media platforms. They have millions of followers. Yesterday, we saw that they have 20.5 million followers on social media, and that is the most of any NFL team. Even the NFL teams, we said yesterday, from much bigger cities like New York. So it's fascinating. My question before we go on is, we know now we are in an age where getting people's attention is really important. And I think this started becoming more important when we started using Google. Like, we use Google search engine, and then Google makes its money from ads, right? Google ads. So being able to get you to click into their ad became really, really important. So, I mean, this has been going on for some years now, but even more these days, you know, as now we have a whole culture, a whole economy, we call it the creator economy. This is something that we've talked about a lot on Advanced. I mean, these are people who make content, they're influencers online, YouTubers, influencers, and they're getting a lot of our attention. So I'd like to ask you, Peter, do you think in 2026, getting people's attention online has become easier or harder?
Great question. I think it has become easier to get more people's attention simply because with the ongoing expansion of the internet over the past couple of decades into human society, it links all of us together. People on all corners of the globe can contact other people and learn about them. So it is easier than ever to get the attention of many, many people. But it's one thing to get attention. It's another thing to keep it. Anyone can get attention. Just do something unexpected, something sensational, shout out, you know, a bad word in a crowd, or do some sort of sensationalistic behavior. People will pay attention to you, mainly just because they think you might be crazy and they have to watch out. But keeping attention after that initial moment, over days, over weeks, over years even, keeping attention, I think, has become harder than ever before, precisely because we are so interconnected in that way. There's all this competition now for attention that exists because in the past, 50 years ago, depending on what you were selling, you had to get the attention of your market or the population of your town or your city or at most maybe your country. Now, you need to get the attention of people all over the world. And that is much harder because people have different tastes and there are different cultures in the world and different things get people's attention in some places that don't in others. So I would say, yeah, it's potentially easier than ever to get massive amounts of attention, but keeping it, that is probably harder than ever before because that's what everyone's trying to do is to get attention.
Peter, I think you have a very, very astute observation, and I really agree with you. Like, I think it's actually easier now to be a one-shot wonder.
Exactly.
One-shot wonder is like you make a social media post that is so sensational. You know, like it, like everyone wants to look at it, everybody wants to share it, but then you fade away. You fade away. By tomorrow, nobody is following you.
Yeah.
You know, and some people have moved on. It's extremely hard to keep attention. And, you know, in the past, like when we were growing up, like when we were young, it's basically in all our countries, in the different countries we lived in, usually there would be maybe three or four main TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stations that everybody watched, mm-hmm. right? Like, for example, in the States, that'd be what, NBC, ABC.
CBS,
right? That's the original before cable, right?
Yeah.
So they were the main stations. And here, like, I think we had also three major TV stations that was the ones that everybody watched. So there was a lot of control over what people watched. But now with the internet, with social media, I mean, there are a million channels to watch.
Yeah. There's my channel, for example.
Yes.
I don't have a channel, actually, but I could.
Anyone could. Yeah. Yeah. And even our AI, you know, there's even channels that are completely like AI channels, AI content.
Yep.
So now we're not only competing against human beings, we have to compete against AI.
Mm-hmm.
And the AI might have a nicer voice than us, and the AI might look better than us, look younger than us.
They can generate content more quickly.
So there's a lot of competition. It's actually a lot harder to keep attention, but attention is the currency now.
Yeah.
It's something that is extremely important. Well, friends, let's talk about the attention economy. Let's get into our first reading for today.
The attention economy. One thing Jones understands, Sham said, is that all attention is good attention. Even negative press raises the profile of the team. If someone in Massachusetts or Nevada turns on a Cowboys game hoping they'll lose, that doesn't matter to the ratings. All that matters is they're watching, Sham said. Perhaps Jones is familiar with the work of Nobel Prize-winning economist Herbert A. Simon, credited with first describing the phenomenon of the attention economy in 1971. In an information and entertainment abundant world, people's attention acts as a scarce commodity, like oil or diamonds, and producers of content become valuable by commanding and controlling large amounts of that commodity. This helps explain why the Dallas Cowboys have remained valuable long after their last Super Bowl win in 1996. Jones has turned monetizing attention, good and bad, into a science.
Peter, yesterday we talked about a very, very intelligent owner of the Cowboys. His name is Jerry Jones. Yesterday we even had this cool word to describe him. We described him as fabled. Can you review that?
The fabled owner of the Cowboys, Jerry Jones. And we talked about how a fable is like a legend or a myth. It's a story or even a song that you sing or that people sing or tell about someone who has done something great or famous in some way or something worth writing a song about. And so Jerry Jones, at least in the field of professional sports, has, with his accomplishments, with the Cowboys, he can now be referred to as the fabled owner, even if no one has literally written a song about him.
Maybe somebody will in the future. Well, here it says, one thing Jones understands is that all attention is good attention. Even negative press raises the profile of the team. Peter, do you agree with this? Is all attention good attention?
Absolutely. The great British poet and playwright Oscar Wilde once said, he was a very witty fellow, wise sort of fellow, and he once said, there is only one thing worse than being talked about, and that is not being talked about. We thrive on attention. The human heart craves attention. And the cowboys have realized, Jerry Jones has realized, that as long as you have people paying attention to you, the money will follow. And that your athletic success, you know, the specifics of the business, are not ultimately the most important factor. It's just, are people paying attention to you?
Are people watching you? And why this is so important is because these teams make, for example, when you're on TV, your TV rating or how many people are watching you at that time slot is extremely important. Like whether a TV show gets renewed or not depends on how many viewers you have. So if you don't have a lot of viewers, you're not going to get renewed next season, right? Like we've seen a lot of great shows not get renewed because their viewership is too low. So on TV, how many views is really important. On YouTube, definitely how many views is important because the more viewers you have, the more money you make from YouTube ad income. And the more the algorithm, or basically the algorithm is how these systems, like whether it's YouTube or it's Facebook or it's Instagram, it feeds things into, like you see things on your newsfeed based on the algorithm. So for the algorithm, the more viewers you have, the better. So Jerry Jones really knows that. And then we talk about the work of a Nobel Prize-winning economist. His name is Herbert A. Simon. And what was the significant finding of Simon?
Right. Well, he's credited with first describing this phenomenon, this sort of dynamic of the attention economy. Now, this is back in 1971. And basically, this means that when you have a lot of information at your fingertips, when you have a lot of entertainment at your fingertips, as the paragraph here puts it, in an information and entertainment abundant world, abundant meaning having a lot of something, people's attention acts as a scarce commodity like oil or diamonds, like we were saying at the beginning of the broadcast today, because there is so much available and so many things calling for our attention, competing for our attention. And so those producers of content, it goes on to say, become valuable are those who can command and control large amounts of that commodity. Again, the commodity being attention.
So what is a commodity, Peter?
Commodity is anything that you use for value. Gold is a commodity. Silver is a commodity. Stocks are a commodity. The example here is oil or diamonds, anything that has value and is often traded because of its value.
So a lot of times we use commodity to describe things that we can sell. The
right.
Natural resources, right?
Yeah.
So here we have the example of oil or diamonds. But because, like you said at the beginning of the program today, people's attention is so limited, right? You only have 24 hours a day and you got to sleep and work.
Right.
So you take off that time. There's limited hours you can spend on entertainment or spend on your free time.
Right.
So to get people to watch you, to get viewers' eyeballs, that is a real win.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real win. And this commodity of attention has become extremely important. So this is part of the reason why the Cowboys have remained so valuable. Because whether you love them or hate them, you still want to follow them.
Right.
You want to know what's going on.
Especially if you hate them. See, that's the thing. People, there's an old saying that says the opposite of hate is not love. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference. And one thing people are not, with regard to the Dallas Cowboys, is indifferent.
People care.
They either care about them and follow them and root for them, hope they win year after year, or they hate them and love to see them fail, and they don't want to miss the chance to see them fail. You know, that is attention. That is the power of attention, because that, you know, again, that is what will open up the purse strings.
Yes. And so in the last sentence of this section, we have Jones has turned monetizing attention. Monetizing here just means to make money. So he has turned making money from attention, whether it's good attention or bad attention, into a science. Peter, can you explain what is turning something into a science?
Right. Turning it into a science means perfecting it in such a way that it is as predictable and regular and dependable as the laws of science.
Do you think Jerry Jones is aware of this?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, do you think, like, he knows that it's good business to get attention? So he's doing everything he can with his team to get more attention.
Yes, yes. No, that, I mean, from the way the article describes it, that seems to be his genius. That seems to be why he is fabled owner Jerry Jones, is because he understands this dynamic of the attention economy and that it's not about success or failure on the field. It's not about how many games they win or if they go to the championship or not. It's our people paying attention. Attention of love, attention of hate, but indifference is the enemy of the attention economy.
Very well said. Well, let's continue into our next section, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the really wise businesses that the Cowboys are doing to make even more money. So let's get into our second reading.
Business 101, Professor Jones. The Cowboys rake in so much money in part because Jones has brought powerhouse business strategies like the vertical integration of Apple and the diversification of the Walt Disney Company into the realm of sports. Many other teams contract out concessions, for example, but the Cowboys join forces with Major League Baseball's Yankees to form Legends, its own concessionaire. Legends is used by other NFL teams like the Rams and Washington Commanders. And with a majority investment from global investment firm Sixth Street in 2021, Legends has expanded to serve more sports arenas and teams in myriad other areas of hospitality. That includes partnerships with international soccer powerhouse Real Madrid, Notre Dame University, and Audi's Formula One project. The Cowboys are the only team that does their own merchandise, earning nearly $200 million a year from that line of business. The Cowboys also make money off a real estate empire that includes the 91-acre, $1.5 billion Star Complex in Frisco, Texas. In addition to serving as the team's headquarters and practice facility, the Star hosts retail, residential, and office space and events like concerts, the Premier Lacrosse League, and marquee high school football games.
Peter, we talked about how important capturing attention is for the Cowboys in continuing their financial success story. But there's definitely a lot of business strategies that the owners of the Cowboys have done over the years. So let's get into some of these business strategies. So first, the Cowboys rake in so much money because Jones, that's the owner, has brought powerhouse business strategies. So when you rake in so much money, I'm just thinking of, like, in North America, in Canada or the U.S., many of us who live in the suburbs, we have large yards. And, you know, in the fall, a lot of leaves fall on our yard. And then we have to use that tool, the rake,
right,
to get the leaves. And the rake can get a lot of leaves at one time.
Right.
So when we're talking about raking in money, it means you're making so much money.
Right. And you didn't have to go out and somehow earn those leaves. You didn't have to persuade them to come over into this pile. You just took out the rake and raked them in.
It just happened. It just happens because you had a good strategy.
Yeah.
In our case of the leaves, there's no good strategy. You just have a lot of trees in your yard. But here they're raking in so much because of some of these business strategies. Let's talk about a few of them. First,
right,
vertical integration.
Right. Vertical integration. You can probably speak to this better than I can, but I was enlightened to learn that vertical integration refers to the degree to which a company, a business, carries out different stages in their process instead of outsourcing those different steps. They do it all in-house. Vertical integration. Am I correct?
Yes, Peter, you're absolutely correct. I'll use an example from the automotive industry because I worked in automotive industry when I was just starting out. It was an earlier job than Studio Classroom. But in the automotive industry, example would be, let's say I'm going to make a car. So I own the steel company and the rubber company. Maybe I own a rubber plantation to make my tires. I own the steel company, you know, that makes steel sheets. And then next, I own everything between the rubber and the steel and, you know, those components. I also own the factories that do the components for my car. Mm-hmm. And then after the components, the modules, like you have to put the components together into modules. So I also own the module factories, the factories that put the modules together. And after the module, I mean, this is like in the automotive industry, we have what we call tier one, tier two, tier three suppliers. Basically, I just own every part of this process from the raw materials all the way into the car that I'm selling you. I own every piece of that.
Right.
And that's basically vertical integration. I basically, from the bottom all the way to the final product, I own everything. And that's how a lot of business empires are made. Like you go upstream or downstream and you buy it. And usually, why do you buy it? It's because if I own it, I can lower the cost.
Right.
I'm not dependent on somebody who will raise the price every year.
Right. You don't have to pay an outside supplier of steel or of rubber. You just make it in-house. Still costs something, but you don't have to pay the additional fee of making someone else rich.
Yes, that's part of it. And then the next word, we have the word diversification. Now, this is a word we kind of know well. It's diversify. If you diversify, it just means you don't put all your eggs in one basket, right?
Right, right.
We use that term in English.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if you are investing, don't buy all, for example, tech stocks.
Right.
Like you buy some tech stocks, you go buy some ETFs, you buy some mutual funds, you buy some bonds. Now, I'm no financial expert. Don't take any of what I'm saying, you know, into your consideration. But what I'm just trying to say is you don't just do one thing. You have to diversify your risk. So here, diversification, it means they have their hands into many different businesses. So, well, let's talk about these businesses, Peter. Let's get into the first one, concessions.
Right. Well, that's a major business in the field of sports. Concessions just means food and drinks. Food and drinks sold on someone else's property. So this is potentially something that could be outsourced to another vendor. But instead, vertical integration, the cowboys have created their own concessionaire, their own concessions business to sell food and drink to people who are watching the game at the stadium instead of contracting that out to another, to a private business. And it's called Legends, modestly enough. This is the name of the company the Cowboys have formed to produce concessions. And the company has done so well that other teams from other sports like baseball also use Legends for their concessions in their stadiums. So again, this is just one example of how it doesn't matter on a given day whether the Cowboys win or lose on the field, their concessions business is making them money.
Yes. It's so smart.
Yeah.
Peter, I love it. I love everything this article is saying because they've found multiple ways to make money. And then let's continue. And the majority investment from global investment firm Sixth Street. Oh, we continue to talk about this concession company, right? This company that does concessions called Legends. So Legends has expanded to even more sports.
Even more sports, even other things outside of sports. Other areas of hospitality, which is can mean many things, but in business and finance, hospitality is the industry that serves food and drink, that provides housing for guests at a special event. Hotels are in the hospitality business, and as we'll see, the Cowboys have their own hotel sort of conference resort facility called the Star Complex. We'll get to that in a couple lines.
Yeah. And then we talk about all the important sports teams that they're serving, right? And now it's not just concessions. It's not just food and drinks, but food and drinks can make in a lot of money. I don't know too much about sports games, how much food and drinks make, but I know, for example, when we watch movies, it's the concessions. It's basically the popcorn and the Coke.
Yeah.
It's that's how actually most movie theaters make most of their money.
Right. Yeah.
From the concessions. So I can just imagine that in sports it's also that, because you're watching these sports games are pretty long, whether it's baseball or football, it could be 2 or 3 hours or even longer. You're bored. You're eating all the time.
Right. The difference is here with the Cowboys, to use the analogy of the movie theater, if Tom Cruise's latest movie comes to the movie theater, the popcorn and soda you buy might also be owned by Tom Cruise.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And
just
so,
brilliant.
You know, that's just more money in his pocket.
I know. So either way, even the movie, you know, it's a pretty terrible movie, you still have to eat your popcorn.
Right. Exactly. Can't see a movie without popcorn.
Brilliant. And then, okay, so concessions, food and drinks is one. And then in sports, of course, clothing or accessories, merchandise.
Yes.
Like all these products that have the brand logo on is also very important. We talked yesterday about merchandise. This is the products and goods that you sell, usually in retail. So Cowboys, they sell their own merchandise.
Yeah, which is apparently unique in professional football. It says they are the only team that does their own merchandise. Again, another example of vertical integration. And they have, so with their own Dallas Cowboys merchandise business, that gets them an extra $200 million each year.
And they're just really good at business. And then we go off, they're also making money from real estate. And basically, they're making a lot of money in rent. Peter, where is this rent coming from?
Well, it's coming from that star complex that we talked about a moment ago, located in Frisco, Texas. It is a 91-acre place, cost of $1.5 billion to build, and it serves as the team's headquarters, the team's practice facility. Sounds like they need a lot of practice. but the Star also hosts retail, residential, and office space. So people live there. People work there. People shop there. They even have concerts. They even have lacrosse league games. Lacrosse, it's another sport, again, like football and soccer, where two teams are running up and down the field. But in this case, they're tossing a ball with these little nets on the end of sticks that they're all carrying around. It's a bit more like hockey, in a sense, without the ice. But they also have marquee high school football games. Marquee, nice little word there, just means very important high school football games. All of this, these events, these activities take place at this Star Complex, and the Cowboys own it.
So they're making a ton of money in rent.
Yeah, and again, this has nothing to do with whether the Cowboys won or lost on the field at a particular football game. This is happening aside from that.
Yes, it seems like Jerry Jones and his crew, they're just really good at business.
They are.
They are brilliant business people. Well, friends, that comes to the end of today's section, but we still have more to talk about the Dallas Cowboys and their winning ways off the field. They might not be winning on the field, but off the field, they are rocking it. Well, make sure to come and join us tomorrow as we continue to talk about the secrets to the Dallas Cowboys' financial success. My name is Rebecca.
My name is Peter.
Say goodbye.
Bye-bye.